Hi there. I'd like to thank you, our listeners, for your support. Makeshift Stories recently celebrated its 200th episode, and we couldn't have got there without you. We're late getting out our first story of the month due to an unexpected health issue with our narrator, Mitchell Too. Mitchell is still recovering, so today we're digging into the archives and have an updated version of episode 52, which Mitchell recorded earlier this year. We're hoping Mitchell recovers soon. Redux is an adjective meaning brought back or bringing back. Welcome to Makeshift Stories Redux. Selected tales re-edited and re-recorded from the last 12 years of the podcast. Relax, let the world go by and open your imagination as we drop back to March 10th, 2012 to listen to Escape Velocity, read by Mitchell Too. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman.
Zeb opened his eyes, somewhat surprised that he was still in the capsule and not tied down to a restraint bench in a detention center. Stars indifferently drifted past beyond the thick diamond glass of the tiny portal, silently sliding out of view, only to appear again, making Zeb guess that the capsule was in a slow tumble. Not the best attitude to be in, he knew, but at least his desperate plan appeared to have worked. He only hoped he had calculated the delta V correctly, so his tiny metallic envelope would reach escape velocity. There was nothing else he could do. It was all up to the laws of motion and gravity now. It had been nearly a month since Zeb had accidentally overheard his instructor and the training school's CEO discussing his fate. They had labeled him an outsider, a daydreamer who didn't follow instructions, who ignored the strict protocols of the school.
"He's untrainable, and a problem."
The finality of the instructor's cruel judgment still echoed in Zeb's mind.
"I know he comes from a tough background, no living parents, here on the ad support program, but he's not the right type. He doesn't fit in."
Zeb didn't need to hear the rest of the conversation to know what that meant. He had been tagged as different. And, in the harsh environment of the rare earth mines of Promethean Industries, there was no place for someone like him. Still, he felt that it wasn't fair to be singled out for just being who he was. After all, he had tried his hardest to conform. But even then, he was often caught drawing pictures on his handheld when he should have been studying the theory behind the remote presence control systems that the mines depended on. His parents had immigrated to the Barnard Star System while his mother was pregnant, so Zeb had been born almost a year into their flight. Like most immigrants, lacking the money to pay for the transit, his parents had signed the standard contract, agreeing to work off the cost of the trip at one of the corporate lunar mining operations on Prometheus, after which they intended to settle on Barnard 2, a small but reportedly beautiful independent planet that orbited close to the dwarf star. Unfortunately, that had never happened. Both Zeb's parents had been killed in an airlock accident 2 years after their arrival at Promethean base, and their debt had fallen on Zeb to pay off. Too young to work in the mining operations, he had become a billboard for one of the corporations, vying to sell their wares to the mining community's many residents. The local euphemism for his situation was that he was ad-supported, and would be until he was old enough to finish his operator training and start working in the mines. Billboarding had been no problem. It simply meant that a tiny processor was inserted into a person's head that allowed one's employer to directly download ads into their brain. Zeb simply had to stand on any busy corridor in the base, and when someone approached, the facial recognition software in his chip would ID the person, and Zeb would receive a custom ad to tell them. But in between, there had been a lot of time to imagine other worlds and dream new ideas. Mine operator training had been the opposite. It required focus and concentration. There was no room for thinking beyond the immediate. Zeb felt the tiny capsule lurch as the attitude jets tried to correct the tumbling, In the back of the cabin, he heard a noise from a small space behind the rear passenger seat. A shadowy, thin figure unfolded, floating into the cabin from its hiding place.
"When traveling transorbital, be sure to upgrade to excursion class," Zeb involuntarily blurted out before he could stop himself.
"Oh, you're ad-supported,"
a surprised teenage girl blurted out, then let her voice trail off. Zeb noticed that she had put a hand over her mouth to keep herself from saying anything more. The girl awkwardly pushed off the back wall a little too hard, giving herself more momentum than she needed. She bounced off the front of the cabin, then managed to snare the back of the seat beside Zeb and pull herself down into it. Zeb hadn't seen her in the escape pod when he had snuck in after claiming he needed to go to the washroom. She must have already been there, he concluded. But how could he have missed her?
"Sorry," embarrassed, he instinctively apologized. "That's the last ad they uploaded to my head before the ship left. It needs to be spoken 10 more times before it's purged. I think we're out of range of the local net, so I won't be getting any more."
Zeb wished he would have had the chance to run the full program before he had initiated his escape, but he hadn't met enough new people. He didn't want to be immediately tagged as ad-supported, but now he didn't have a choice. He only hoped the first 10 people he met on Bernard 2 wouldn't care. It was something he'd have to live with. The more immediate problem was his unexpected traveling companion.
"Who are you?"
he demanded in an irritated tone. The girl looked to be a year or two older than him. She was slight of build and had the pale complexion of someone who had grown up under artificial light. She glared at Zeb defiantly, then before he could stop her, she reached across, grabbed his handheld, and drew several symbols on its glowing screen, then passed it back to him. Zeb saw she had scribbled 4 crude pictographs: a money sign, an equal sign, something that looked like a waveform, and finally, a drawing of Prometheus with an X near the South Pole. Zeb immediately knew what the girl was trying to say. She was from an unaffiliated colony, one of the groups that had broken away from the corporate consortium which ran Prometheus. All he knew about them was what was in the training center's net, which simply described them as failed social experiments, with a rather unusual tax system. Zeb checked the readings on the escape pod console, then despite the fact there was no one other than the girl within 10,000 kilometers, whispered, "We're still on a trajectory that's taking us away from Prometheus. Capsules at 40,000 kilometers out. We only need to reach 60,000 before Bernard's 2 gravity will catch us. I don't think the local network can pick up your implant this far out. I know mine hasn't connected recently. I haven't received a new ad since the transport hit orbit. I'm sure you're safe. You can talk." The girl grabbed the handheld back, cleared it, sketched out another drawing, then shoved it at Zeb. This time, it contained a diagram of Bernard 2, with its 2 small moons. She had penciled in a series of curved lines that joined them. The first show the path of the transport where it broke orbit from Prometheus, heading to Sirium, Bernard 2's other moon. The second line split away from the first in a graceful arc, which curved toward Bernard 2. Beside that one, she had drawn a question mark, and beside the question mark, a line that swung back to Prometheus, forming a long, looping orbit. Zeb was taken aback. Someone else had been thinking of this crazy plan, too.
"I know," he said, pointing to the question mark.
"I thought of that as well. If I had ejected us too soon, we wouldn't have the necessary Delta V and would have looped back to Prometheus. But if I had waited too much longer, we would have simply followed the transport to Sirium." The window was very tight. "Still, I think it's safe for you to talk. Even if we end up falling back, you can only be taxed for the words that your implant has caught, which can't be more than a few sentences. That's all my implant will hold without being connected to a net. Anyway, with 2 of us on board now, our air supply would just barely get us back. But who'd want to go back anyway? I take it you were being sent to Sirium as well to get focused?" The girl finally seemed to relax, then tentatively tested her voice, habitually stopping to measure each word before she spoke.
"Not rich, so few words. Try use little, can't afford even these. Was sent away.
Zeb recognized the truncated lingo of the economic underclass of the unaffiliated colonies, and for a brief moment he felt fortunate that he had been a billboard. Between each commercial pitch, his mind and voice had been his own to use as he wanted. He couldn't imagine being poor in a colony where there was a tax on speech, so only the wealthy could afford to speak their mind.
Estrella,
the girl haltingly said, pointing to herself at the same time.
Oh, your name is Estrella. I'm Zeb.
Estrella nodded, then flashed five fingers and a plus sign.
You want to wait till we're a bit further away from Prometheus before you're willing to talk?
Zeb guessed. She nodded her head enthusiastically. As it turned out, she didn't mean 5 minutes. She meant 5,000 kilometers. At roughly 2 kilometers per second, it was almost an hour before she spoke. Zeb had used the time to rerun his calculations, taking into consideration the additional mass of his uninvited guest, and the figures were not encouraging. With the added weight, their already small window had been reduced to the proverbial eye of the needle. Everything would need to be nearly perfect for them to fall into the gravitational maw of Bernard II. Estrella peered at Zeb's calculations, frowning with concern.
Trip for one, two almost not.
She still spoke in broken sentences.
Estrella, you can speak in full tongue now,
Zeb encouraged. I know neither of us expected this. It was just dumb luck. There were 2 escape capsules in that hall.
We wait. See the much I have added. Maybe okay? Timing was good.
Estrella noted hopefully, in somewhat more fluid language.
We'll know for sure in 2 or 3 hours.
Zeb tapped several keys, causing the display to draw a thin, curved cone, a green line in its center pushing up from the bottom of the screen. He shoved himself back into his acceleration chair.
As long as we stay in that zone. We'll think. Maybe there are other options,
Estrella suggested optimistically.
They'll know where we came from.
Zeb reached over to check the capsule's environmental.
Who?
Estrella questioned.
When we arrive on Bernard II, between your dialect and my ads, they will know where we came from.
How long will it take you to speak normal?
Don't think matters on B2. Not company or council controlled. Why people want to go there. Why the company makes hard get there. Owns the transport. Charge too much. So everyone forced to work off trip.
How long? Zeb asked. How long does it take to pay for a ticket from your colony to Bernard?
Years, if lucky. Most aren't. Then decades. But maybe me different, she smiled. Chip won't matter then, right?
She tapped her temple.
I've been a billboard most of my life, Zeb admitted. But once you start in the mines, they remove the chip. I've seen it happen for other ad supporteds.
The transition is easy. No chip, no ads, no impulse to broadcast. He stopped, unsure of what to say next.
But I got tagged as untrainable, a daydreamer, apparently useless as an operator. What about you?
Zeb could see that Estrella was trying to concentrate, trying to break her conditioning.
Parents were on council. No need to worry then. Could pay for words. Spoke council class. 3 years back, parents got kicked off. Opposed plans to build extra ships. Me. Never adapted to lingo. Liked to tell stories too much. Even using reduced word set. Was big problem.
Estrella paused to look out the tiny portal. Sirium, now the size of a small orange button, drifted serenely past as the capsule tumbled on.
Look nice place from here, but, she pointed. New too, like me. Storytellers. Sent there. Came back. Spoke lingo well. Too well. Just say functional things now. Their stories are gone. Not the same. Something missing. But they're fixed. They're focused. Fit in now, too. Not for me. Don't want lose that something. That something is me. Will not go. No matter the cost.
Zeb anxiously checked the capsule's course again. And Bernard, too. If we can make it. He stopped to adjust a setting. You know, I found a file on my parents' handheld years after their death. It was full of pictures of Bernard too and descriptions of life there. I understand now why they so desperately wanted to go, even if it meant working a decade on Prometheus to pay for the trip. They'd given up a lot. 8 years in transit and another 10 in contract labor. 18 years altogether. They would have been well into their 50s by the time we were allowed to leave Prometheus. They died 5 years ago. This would have been their time. This month their contract would have been over, and they would have been on their way to B2. If I hadn't been tagged, I would have got my operator's license next year. That would have left 10 years for me to pay off my transit and rejoin them. I would have got to Bernard too just before I turned 26. But I still feel lucky. My parents have been able to pay a large portion of our fare. I've heard of somewhere only the grandchildren ever get to Bernard. That's why the unaffiliated colonies started, isn't it? People wanting out of their contracts? But I never understood how that helped them. They're all still on Prometheus. At least, that's what we're told. Estrella gave Zeb a woeful look. We work to build our own ships to escape. But with little resource, very slow, very hard, only few have left so far. But we have hope, however small. The brilliant white of Bernard's cloud tops set off against the dark green of the land, and the blues of her oceans momentarily lit the cabin through the small portal. Estrella fell silent as they both looked hopefully at their intended destination. It drifted slowly out of view as the escape capsule rolled. She looked over at the screen in front of Zeb and pointed. She didn't need to ask what the display meant. The green line marking their progress had begun to drift toward one side of the cone. 2/3 of the way up was a red line descending at a painfully slow pace. They had to be in the cone when that line intersected the green path. Another hour and we should know for sure. Zeb tried to sound confident, but already suspected the worst. He was angry. A 1 in 2 chance had gone against him and may have taken his only opportunity. No, both of their opportunities away. If only they had taken separate capsules, he silently lamented. Frustrated, Zeb lashed out at Estrella. Why didn't you say something before I ejected? There would have been time for me to take another capsule. Didn't know who was you. Could have been crew checking. Hid to find out. You started separation before I could know. But there may still be a way. Estrella mumbled. I will think. Zeb angrily scowled, went to slam his fist into the console in frustration, then changed his mind and turned to face Estrella instead. I thought that people who didn't fit in, who wanted out, tried to escape to the unaffiliated colonies. So, I don't understand why they would send an unaffiliated to Sirium.
Thought be obvious. I tell stories. Can't stop. Don't want to. Council consider waste of words. Waste of mental capacity. No time for distraction. All must focus on escape. Build ships. Leave. All other words taxed. Heavily discouraged. Caused family great debt with my stories. We can't pay. Forced to council court. Court give no choice. Sent to Sirium for focusing.
Zeb had imagined the unaffiliated colonies as being places to escape the strict regimentation of the company camps, not be worse than them. He had even considered exiling himself to one before he had come up with his risky escape plan. I don't understand. Your colony sounds worse than Prometheum's industrial stations. Why would anyone want to stay there?
The chance to escape.
Estrella tried to explain. Everyone gets to leave as soon as there is space on a ship. Faster we build ships, faster all people leave. So we work hard. Getting suspicious, Zeb asked, Have you actually known anyone who has left for Bernard II? Last year, many left on finished ship. We watched the launch. I sad, but happy for them. Next ship finished, we are on. Estrella defensively stated. But not for me now. I must pay family debt, so I plan, like you. The green line of their trajectory was now touching the edge of the cone, yet the red line that marked 60,000 kilometers was still painfully far away. They were not going to make it. Zeb slouched in his seat. If we're lucky, they'll pick us up before our air runs out. It'll take 2 days to loop back. If we sleep most of it and don't speak, we might have a chance. At least you're good at not speaking. Or one of us could take a walk outside. He tried to joke. Estrella angrily scolded. You first. But you can't. No airlock on capsule. But I have thought of plan. It's one way. Works or doesn't. Either way, we don't go back. Estrella leaned over, grabbed Zeb's handheld, and began sketching out a series of figures and diagrams. Who went on that last ship, Estrella? Did you know anyone? Zeb quizzed. Annoyed at the disruption, Estrella pulled a small reading screen from her pocket and shoved it at him. Look, first two photos in gallery. My friends. We'll go find Aunt Bernard when get there. They help us. Now, I work. Very little time to figure out. Zeb was about to look at the photos when Estrella impatiently nudged him and pointed to her calculations on the small screen. Zeb looked from her work to the console displaying their course. The green line was now touching the edge of the cone, and he instantly understood Estrella's rush. Her plan had to be executed before they fell outside. Are you sure? He checked her figures, then rechecked them using the capsule's computer. It'll mean a ballistic descent, we could burn up, and we'll have to open vents to get air as soon as we slow down enough in the atmosphere. It's very risky. I want to remain me, was all Estrella said. Zeb went to check her calculations again, but accidentally picked up Estrella's reading screen, triggering the photo gallery. Two familiar faces peered back at him. Are these your friends? He asked, confused. Yes, but no time to... Must act now. Quick, or we fall back. Zeb was about to say something, then simply nodded and called up a new panel on the control screen and tapped in a series of commands. For a few seconds, they were pushed gently back into their seats as the remaining oxygen was vented from one of the capsule's two tanks. The green line moved ever so slightly away from the edge of the cone, and a yellow warning light appeared on the escape pod's environmental panel. Zeb let out a breath he wasn't aware he had been holding. The photos, your friends, I've met them. Impossible. Estrella began to protest, but Zeb cut her off. Listen, I met them in the training college. We were told they were new returnees from Cerium, from another mining station. They weren't like the rest of us. They were like they were machines. It spooked me. It made me want to escape before I became one of them, before I was focused too. A realization stabbed painfully through Estrella. The colony, the industrial camps, one and the same. No one ever escaped, did they? She gasped, but Zeb stopped her from saying anything more, then typed on his handheld and showed her the message. Save the O2. We'll need it. We just hit escape velocity.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To listen to other great APN podcasts, such as Bollywood is for Lovers, where Matt Bowles and Aaron Fraser explore the world of Hindi cinema, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by the Shared Mic. Can you remember the last time you spoke to someone from a totally different generation who wasn't a member of your family? There is so much we can learn from listening to people, both younger and older than ourselves. The Shared Mic, Conversations for the Ages, is a unique interview format intergenerational podcast by Age Friendly Edmonton, bringing together people from different ages and backgrounds to discuss topics that matter to them. Season 2 is now out and features conversations about cultivating friendships, building careers, exploring virtual theater, volunteerism, and much more. Find Shared Mic on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. The Shared Mic is brought to you by the Edmonton Seniors Coordinating Council and the City of Edmonton. Makeshift Stories is also brought to you in part by ATB Financial. If you're wondering about how to manage your finances, rebuild emergency savings, or continue to save for your child's education, ATB can help. ATB was built to answer Alberta's financial questions in tough times. For answers to your questions and to learn more, visit atb.com. Makeshift Stories is released twice a month around the 1st and the 15th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David Hume. If you'd like to connect with us, send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite podcast services. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.